ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Burning books feels almost medieval, something that would have happened a very long time ago or very far away, where authoritarian leaders or religious groups are trying to control the way people think. These days, thanks largely to our streaming service subscriptions, we're reading so much less than we used to. So why is the number of banned books skyrocketing? I'm Tegan Taylor and this is Quick Smart, the show that feeds you big ideas in bite-sized pieces. So what is it about some humble books that people find so unsettling? What is the justification for the huge uptick in banned books? And how could these book bans impact democracy? Someone who's been sneaking around the restricted section of the library is Sarah Lestrange. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, it's my favourite place to be.
How many banned books have you taken out at the library making this series, and are you now on a police watch list?
I might have been on a police watch list for a while, who knows? I guess the scary thing is about banned books is that so many of the books I love are being banned, particularly in the United States at the moment. They're being banned for young people, teenagers, and in public libraries. Books that I love include Toni Morrison, one of the great writers of the 20th century, her book Beloved, Sula. They're being banned in America because they touch on different issues. So I'm so passionate about this issue about banned books that I've made a five-part series for the book show on banned books, looking at why we ban books, where they're being banned, and what this uptake means for us.
Your passions have been much more productive than mine. So congrats on that. Why?
Well, it's good to have an outlet.
People have so many opportunities to access things that aren't books these days. And objectively, I think that book reading has decreased. And yet we're seeing this uptick in banning books. What is going on there?
Well, in the US context, it all has to do with politics, and books are being weaponized in the, you know, ideological culture war battles. So it's not necessarily that everyone's reading these, you know, illicit books and we've got to make sure kids aren't exposed to awful things. It's that books are being published by people from marginalized backgrounds or backgrounds where they haven't had a lot of voice. They're coming into the arena and those with power kind of don't like it. So squashing those voices in a way, that's in a kind of crude way. So ultimately, I wondered about this too, which is partly also why I wanted to look into it. I just couldn't understand it. You can get everything on the internet. Why are we focusing on books, and not just any old books? These are literary books, so books that are exploring ideas in a nuanced way. Why are they the focus for this culture war? And it kind of clicked for me when one of the people I interviewed about this series, Casey Meehan from PEN America, which is a human rights organisation that advocates for free speech in America and around the world. And she said that it's actually part of an attack on the pillars of democracy. So if we think of the right to read, freedom of speech, and just being able to borrow books from the library as an attack on democracy, it kind of made more sense to me. And it's also, you know, dog whistling. It's part of that, the way that legislators in America also dog whistle to their constituents to show that they care about the issues that matter to their voters. And, you know, if those voters are anti-trans, are uncomfortable about the history of American slavery, then they know they're going to get some reaction if they talk about banning particular books.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Toni Morrison there before, and one of the books that you mentioned in the series is The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. You also mentioned Australian author Maxine Beneba Clark. One thing all of these women have in common is that they are black, and that seems to be part of that dog whistling, I suppose, you mentioned, at least in Angie Thomas's case.
Yeah, so PEN America has done the figures on the sorts of books that are more likely to be banned, and it's something like 40% of books that are about race and racism are being banned at the moment. And I was telling this to a colleague and they're like, oh, so books that are racist are being banned. I'm like, no, books that are calling out racism are being banned. So books that explore police brutality, that explore inequality, oppression, why some communities get more resources than others. These books are being banned because they're dealing with difficult topics. There's this idea that young people can't deal with these difficult topics. And so The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas came out in 2017. I love this book. It's a really accessible book. The main character star is just a wonderful heroine and she has to deal with a really difficult issue. And that's because 16-year-olds do. She witnesses the murder of her friend by the police and she has to work out whether she speaks up about it. This stuff happens to 16-year-olds. I mean, that's part of the horror of it all. So we need to talk about it. We need to have these avenues to talk. And fiction can be a really great way to open up space for dialogue and debate. And unfortunately, that's where some people find these ideas a bit scary.
I think about books as holding a mirror up to society. Mm. And also, to read a book is a really private experience. Like, you're not going to a movie theatre and watching the same movie at the same time with everyone else. It's something that you do privately and that you experience on your own. Is there something about that maybe that is a reason why books seem like a threat to powerful bodies?
Yes, I guess that comes back to the right to read itself. So thinking about the history of America and slavery, African-American slaves weren't allowed to be taught to read because it was connected with ideas of freedom, that if they learnt to read, they might break free of their chains. It was all instrumental in their oppression. It's this idea that if we're alone with a book and we can think freely, then that's a problem if we're trying to limit the range of ideas that exist in society. I just can't get away from this idea of the culture wars in America, that somehow books have just become this locus for the attention. And I'm still confused about it because what is often said about the attacks on these books, so what happens is that parents or concerned citizens will go to a school board and say, you've got this book, you shouldn't have it. And then the school board will say, okay, we'll convene some meetings, and they'll have meetings to determine whether to keep it or not. And the thing is that a lot of the people submitting to these school boards haven't read the book. They've just been given information from ideological organisations that say, we don't like this book, and they send out, you know, 200 pages to 200 people. They haven't read the book. And in the last 3 years, 10,000 titles have been banned.
Yikes.
That's in American public schools and public libraries. It's quite a massive
I'm trying
figure.
To put that number into perspective. Like, I'm trying to think how many books would be at my whole local library.
Exactly. So you come to this point where you wonder, are there going to be any books left that are of any quality and nuance and interest? That's why we read, not just for escapism, but to dive into another person's worldview, which can be fascinating or it can be challenging, but that's where the excitement lies.
But also for the audiences, that maybe fiction is the way they see themselves. Mm. And I wonder what it does to people in those communities when their stories are being suppressed and not being able to tell their own stories.
I have to tell you, Tegan, as I was writing the script for my first episode on The Hate U Give, I started getting teary because that's what I was contemplating. You're telling a whole group of people that they don't matter, that their lived experience is too difficult for the rest of a country or a community to deal with. And I think that effect of silencing can only have negative impacts in the long term. We live in a pluralistic society and we need to encourage everyone to have a voice because that way democracy lies and that way we feel more connected to each other.
What do we, so this is America and that's a country that we look to a lot, I think, for maybe a bigger scale model of what's happening here. Mm. What's the state of book banning in Australia?
Well, it's very different. So Australia was once the most censorious country in the English-speaking world.
Really?
Yeah, we were banning Brave New World, Lady Chatterley's Lover, Portnoy's Complaint. And what was happening was that there was people who were called the censors, and they would collect books that were being imported to Australia, read them and say, oh no, that's a book about extramarital affair. That's a book about divorce. We can't have that. And then putting those books in boxes. There was an actual library of books the censors wouldn't let Australians read.
Oh my gosh. Does it still exist?
Yeah, well, Nicole Moore is a scholar, and she found those boxes, hundreds of them, in the archives, and she went through them and wrote a book called The Censors Library. And so it all changed with the Gough Whitlam government, and it's a little bit dull. We have the Australian Classification Board that classifies all material, films, publications and movies, TV and computer games. Most books aren't classified. They just accept that publishers will do the right thing. And the philosophy of the board is that adults have a right to read a range of material, and their job is to allow that to happen within the bounds of legality and, you know, accepted morality.
That's great, and we could pat ourselves on the back for it, but we live in such a globalised society now. Is it enough for us to just be all like, we're all right, mate, or do we need to be more participatory in this global discussion about banned books?
I think the best way to participate is to read books and talk about them amongst your friends and family, go to the library, support writers' festivals. And I think it's really important, yeah, to defend your right to read if and when it starts being clamped down on, because we don't know where that will lead. Will that lead to the end of the institutions that we value in a democracy? That's the heart of it, and we certainly don't want to see that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Tegan.
QuickSmart today was made on the lands of the Jagera and Turrbal, Gadigal and Wurundjeri people. And if you liked this chat with Sarah Lestrange, you'll also love the chat that I did with her last year on literary fakes and frauds, a rollicking tale, if I do say so myself. Or you might like what I think might be our most popular episode so far, which is all about the mysterious disappearance of Agatha Christie. Yes, that one. And if you liked this, send it please to your favourite bookworm or librarian or the banner of books in your neighbourhood. Just spread the word. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.